Today's classic New Letters on the Air features poet Valjina Mort, whose work gives insight into her native country, Belarus. In this latter part of our 2012 interview, she talks about her second poetry book published in the U.S., Collected Body. First conceived as a work about her grandmother, it contains so much more.
It is a book about migration and movement. That's why it is a collected body. The transplanted body, the body that is exiled, the body that is transformed by the birth of children, the body that is transformed by wars and repressions.
Hear Valjina Mort talk about Collected Body with readings from Rutgers University's 2012 Midwest Poets Series, all great preparation for the fall 2020 release of her next book, Music for the Dead and Resurrected. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air, produced by UMKC's New Letters Magazine. I'm talking today with Valjina Mort. She's the author of three collections of poems. One was published in Belarus, your first one in 2005, called I'm as Thin as Your Eyelashes. And then you have two that have been published by Copper Canyon Press here in America. One's called Factory of Tears, and the other is Collected Body. The most recent one came out in 2011. And I noticed that you won the Lannan Foundation Literary Fellowship. Was that to actually work on Collected Body?
Yes, to work on Collected Body and to, well, to live.
Yes.
While doing so. Yes, it was a grant that really saved my life.
The Lannan Foundation always finds the best poets. I think they really have a history of locating people and really helping them develop.
You know, I won't apply the best poets to myself, but the second half of what you're saying, that they really find you at the right time, is true. It was very true for me.
That's great. Well, let's talk a little bit about where you come from. You were born in Minsk, right?
Yes.
But you spent summers
In the countryside. Yes, yes. Right. It is a pretty normal practice for every Eastern European child to spend summers in the countryside with your grandmother.
And what did you say your grandmother's name was?
Yanina. And she was born in a small village in Belarus. The village is called Podlyadze. It's about an hour by car away from the capital, Minsk. So she was born in the kitchen of her own house.
Oh, really?
Yes.
In the kitchen, not in a bedroom, but in the kitchen. Interesting. Yeah.
Closer to the water.
Yeah.
My summers in the countryside with my grandmother. First you love it, then you protest against it when you're a teenager. But there's no way out of it. In fact, I don't remember ever spending a summer in the city. And every time when I find myself in the city in summer, I'm just a lost person. I don't know what to do with myself. I need to be, you know, in the garden, in the hammock, on the veranda, anything else. I don't understand how to function in summer in the city.
Well, you must be, you're now at Cornell in Ithaca, so you'll probably be looking forward to being in Ithaca in the summertime, or at least part of it, because it's not really in the city either.
So. Yeah, even though this summer I won't get to experience it because I'll be teaching in Germany, in Berlin.
Oh, so you're going to be summer in the city there.
Yeah.
Talk about what you're doing with place inside the collected body.
There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of migration. So the book, even when we are in Belarus, we do move a lot around, even if it's from one village to another.
What's making people move?
Well,
in family?
Here in the book, people move because they marry. People move because they're forced by the government to abandon one place and told to live in a different place. And then there are characters who are exiled to Siberia. That's during 20s and 30s in Eastern Europe. So it was the process known as collectivization, when people who had land were stripped of that possession. And so they were forced to relocate into collective farms, villages where the land was owned by the government. And that's what happened to my family. For instance, the first memory that my grandmother had of her life was when people came to take the roof off their house to make sure that they couldn't live there anymore. So they had to move. So there is a lot of that movement here, and it happens constantly. And then they move because their parents die and they have to go to an orphanage. And then the war, World War II, moves them around again. So that's something, that kind of migration in movement is something that is very typical for the United States.
Right.
Everybody moves here. You could rarely meet a person who lives in the same house, in the same town where they were born. Or they might return to that place, but there's always some time when they leave and stay someplace else, whether it's college or, again, marriage or a job or just, you know, trying to find yourself, you know, for some other more metaphysical reasons when people go away and come back. And I think that Eastern Europe is a territory where people had to move not because they chose to, but because they were forced to.
Right.
So the idea of movement, this migration, has a completely different connotation. People want to have a settled life. They want to belong to a place and to know the place that they belong to. Because sometimes even when they didn't move, the borders of the countries moved.
Right.
So without moving, they found themselves suddenly living in a different country, suddenly belonging to a different culture. Suddenly they're told that they now have to start speaking a different language, even though they have not moved anywhere. So
that would be even harder, I think.
Yeah. So the connotation is completely different. Movement is always forced, and there is a great desire to stay settled, finally, because that would mean that you're taking control of your life.
In Collected Body, you have such wonderful personalities in here, but the one I was really touched by was Aunt Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Just her life and the fact that she was from one village, married in another, and would walk back and forth to see her mother. And it kind of gives us a picture of that world. It has nostalgia and yet recognizing the difficulty, you know, in past times as well. I think that's what's appealing about it.
Listen now to Valjina Mort read from her long poem, Aunt Anna, in her book, Collected Body, while at Rutgers University's 2012 Midwest Poet Series in Kansas City. This is New Letters on the Air.
I'm going to read three separate parts from a prose poem, Aunt Anna, and even though they're separate, I'm not going to pause between them, hoping that you won't notice. I'm going to start in the middle of this prose poem, and if you were reading from the beginning, you would have known that the narrator in this piece is still a child, and you here is the child's grandmother, and Josefa is the name of the grandmother's mother, who is sometimes referred to as your mother. After the cemetery, you took me to a blue house, its door thrust wide open by a woman, her breasts like the Ural Mountains separating her face from her body. She moved with brisk loudness, dressed in so many layers, flaring one under another, sweaters and shirts opening like doors into new rooms and floors, that it seemed the blue house itself lived inside her, not the other way around. She invited us in. The mudroom revealed rows of milk cans filled up to the brim and covered with carefully cut squares of yellowish gauze. The smell of motherhood around that woman, the mudroom was its source. Daily milking, with her forehead pressed against the cow's side, like a child hunched over a piano. Milking the white piano keys into a can, giving each teat a drowning man's grip. The steam rising over the milk warmed up by cow's blood, the same steam that rises over its manure, like a halo which crowns indiscriminately the saint and the disturbed. To which does motherhood in M belong? M is a village. Sanctity or disturbance, milk or manure. Mothering a child into a country unfit for history, as if history were the kind of fruit which required a warmer climate, a richer soil, abler cultivation. A child who, before learning her own name, would learn that history had to be tangible, like meat at dinner. But just like meat at dinner, it also remained an abstraction, a dinosaur. Meat and history, two scenes of luxury against the local absence of religion. Mothering a child into the land one cannot walk to, nor fly to, nor swim, the land reachable only through a mother's womb, which is a dangerous road, and many die trying. Mothering a child into the land where the grains of sand are still being separated into those that would become stones and those that would grow into mountains. Where birds are so huge, their crests are a herd of galloping horses, and their eyes take a day to close and another day to open. Where grass is so tall, it is deemed as the underworld. And underneath the grass, the lightning of roots, the cable where electricity lives like a mammal that knows its way into the quietest house, where it steals the dark and eats the cold. You were mothered into this, in the kitchen where bread was being baked, and the mother in Yusefa, steaming with blood and sweat, raced against the kindled baking oven. The moment your head showed, a sudden spasm of smoke from the oven erased the room, and your blinded mother couldn't decide what to deliver first, a loaf of bread or her baby. Somebody must have thought there was still a chance to erase that moment from the face of the earth, to start blank, to redraft, to replace a kitchen with a hospital in Paris and call you Serge Gainsbourg. Or in Chicago, James Dewey Watson. You could have been the king of Malaysia, or several weeks old in Italy, you could have become a casualty of a bomb attack against Mussolini. You could have been swept away by three earthquakes. But your mother whiffed, a girl, and that word began your world of low log houses ingrained in the black soil. Where you learn the meaning of pink from a cow's nipple, the meaning of maroon from a boiled beet, and the meaning of blue from a dead man's body. Born in a coal, you were promised wealth, health, fool's luck, and bird's milk. In truth, you had dragged the coal with you because you knew what misery and need awaited outside. The call was your only chance at having something of your own. You smuggled it out of a womb. You were born already a suitcase trader. On your exit from the vagina, you were caught, undressed, and rinsed with a stream of smoke. Your mother kneeled with her squirrel hands at her face. Or maybe I'm retelling it wrong. Maybe those were not the squirrel hands that she had, but two front squirrel teeth. The tooth of good and the tooth of evil. She bit them through you, threaded a needle through the bites, and sewed you to that soil like a button. And so that you didn't have any doubts, she threw over your head a noose. Your mother, who sits on the bench in front of the house and coughs out red crumbs of blood hastily picked up by hungry birds. Your mother, rolled up on her deathbed, folded along every joint, ready to be shipped away, ready to be a light load, ready to return everything she has been given. This body, already less believable than its own shadow, while its shadow can still break the window against which it is cast. this face that explains beauty in the simplest lines, these curls, as if somebody had emptied an overscribbled diary over her head. She brushes its words off her face, scratches them off her neck, spits them out of her mouth. Her face is already only a feast that death is trying to unclench. Her sense is already tuned to a different frequency. She's cold when it's hot and hot when it's cold. Sour tastes bitter, bitter tastes salty, but nothing tastes sweet enough. I rest on the pillows embroidered by you, Mama, while the worms embroider your resting body. Stiff as a doll, I'm still small enough to play with, to spoon-feed the soil that has been shoveled over your young mouth.
Valjina Mort, reading at the Midwest Poet Series. That was part of the poem Aunt Anna, included in her book Collected Body, which we're discussing here on New Letters on the Air.
It seems that part of this book is in Belarus, mm-hmm. and then part of it, we're on islands somewhere.
Mm-hmm. When we leave Belarus, yes, there's a lot of movement. And most of the movement, as you pointed out, is moving around the islands. Some cold islands, some very warm islands. And that also has to do with the presence of the landscape in the book. For me, landscape is the primary image of just of my being, of my life. In the beginning, you asked me about my summers in the countryside with my grandmother. And that landscape around our house, it is me. You know, if I had to identify myself with something, you know, I hate the word identity. I know it's such a hip word right now. I don't like that. I don't think that we should be looking for identity constantly.
Don't want me to call you a Belarusian American?
Yeah, I don't really care. I think that identity is greatly overrated. Yeah. But if I had to say what is me, who I am, I would be that landscape. I would be those fields. I would be those forests. I would be that horrible, stinky river that crossed the field and that horizon with other villages on its line and certain trees, you know, the distance between objects and trees, the colors of that place. That's myself. That's I. And something that is a fact about that landscape is that it's very waterless. I mentioned that one stinky little river. It is a very waterless landscape. And this idea that you're landlocked, because Belarus is a landlocked country without any big water around, it does affect the way you perceive the world. And the ocean was another embodiment of the invisible for me. This idea of a big water that goes on forever, that is greatly powerful and greatly indifferent. I love nature, and something that strikes me about nature is how indifferent it is to human suffering, for instance. How it just goes on, it continues.
Right, right.
While we here with our little and big tragedies, the wind is blowing, the leaves are rustling in the trees, the flowers bloom and die. There is a great comfort in that indifference, I think. That's why I think in tragedy, for me, it's always very comforting to turn to the indifferent nature. Ocean, for me, embodies the greatest and most powerful indifference, that kind of a stone face of nature towards you. You can stand on the beach and shout and cry. It's the great indifference washing at your feet.
Yeah.
When I get out of Belarus, when the lyrical eye gets out of Belarus, because as I say, a lot here is imagined. This eye is drawn to big water.
Yeah.
So there is the North Sea, there is the Caribbean, and so there is a lot of island talking.
And you've spent some time in the islands because you've actually done some writing down there,
yes.
Right? I thought I detected a slight accent from your husband when I was talking to mm-hmm. him. Is he from the islands?
Yeah, he's from Jamaica.
Aishan Hutchinson is a poet as well. Mm-hmm. He is from Jamaica. Okay. Mm-hmm. I noticed that Island is the ending poem of the book. Should we read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Island. Rash of the Hubbleites in the mountain region. Night, he says, is the dark humor of the day. First you're scared, but by the sunrise I'll get you laughing. My head, thrown back in laughter, has bought me more than money thrown forward, and men pressed me down and worked like a Chinese seamstress. But none could slap my face as hard as the sea slaps its adopted child and steps back, all tears. This island, spat out by the sun over the world's shoulder, a fence holds the Bougainvillea laughter behind its teeth. A metal gate guards the doze of heat-stricken watchdogs. A road comes up to my face and stands like a mirror, showing everything that has led me to it. A bed soft like bruised fruit, a whole lime garden bruised by the afternoon shade, and his book's heart spine breaking with the day. A body strips down all the way to forgiveness and grants itself before there's even a reason, unless it wants to tell the other, I forgive your juices for not feeling this hard fruit, your skin for not cracking and rotting over the ants' heads. I forgive your throat for not birthing the dog's cuff. I forgive your hand right now, rising, falling, and leaving trace unlike what it praises. I forgive your shadow for never becoming a stain to mark this road, this bed, but mostly this sea. Bricks of gray moonlight fall weightlessly through the wooden shades, building a new wall above the sink. Here he lies on his stomach. The gap between his ass and his thighs forms a perfect black diamond. Horizon, blistered by the setting sun, heals, leaving a hardly visible scar.
That's got some power to it. Island, and that's the final poem in the book Collected Body by Valjina Mort.
I'm preparing a German edition of this book. It has been translated into German, and Island is not the last poem in the book there.
Oh, really? So, now, what made you change it?
You just never finish. And you abandon, and then when you have a chance to come back, you always want to change something, a little bit of something. You know, you made me to go back to some poems that I have not read, and I already... You know,
I noticed you penciling something in there. Yeah. Well, you know, when I talked to Donald Hall, he talked about a poem that he just kept whittling down and whittling down and whittling down. And he said, eventually it will disappear. So maybe that's what you've done to Island.
Yeah, but that's a good thing when a poem disappears like that.
I read somewhere that you have trouble writing in the States, so it's not all connected to having a new daughter, that sometimes you have to get out in order to write. Yeah. Is that right?
Well, it's not just trouble. I don't think I have trouble writing in the States necessarily, as I just have trouble writing at home sometimes, yeah, because I'm a busy bee. I'm that paranoid Eastern European who... always looking for trouble. And I like having a clear head when I write. So I have to be away from things like a refrigerator that needs to be either filled or cleaned. I have to be away from a bed that is either too inviting to rest or needs to be made. I have to be away from a huge amount of distractions. So I have to be away from my daily life. But I do think a lot about poems that I'm going to write. I think about them everywhere, and I make notes everywhere. It just, when it comes to organizing these notes, it's nice to be in a place where you have a clear head, all of your
distractions. So you're always writing. It's always going on in your head.
Yes.
It's just that when you are sitting down to put pen to paper, you need to be in a place where you feel free to do that.
Yeah. Because I put the book down on paper in just a few months at a residency on a small island in Germany, the island called Sylt.
There's a poem about
Yeah, there are a few poems about Sylt, yes.
Okay.
And then I just kept editing the poems already at home. Once they're on paper, I can work on them anywhere. It's just that the process of getting them from my mind to the paper is the hardest one.
There's so much more to talk about. I mean, there was a lot that got opened up in reading these books, but you said so many things that have triggered things in my mind.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, well, that's what poets are supposed to do.
We talked about everything that I myself also think about all the time.
Well, I've really enjoyed it, and I'm looking very much forward to your reading.
By the way, Jamaican poet Aishan Hutchinson, who's also at Cornell and has been published in New Letters magazine, won the 2016 National Book Critics Circle Award for House of Lords and Commons. Now here's Valjina Mort at the 2012 Midwest Poets Series.
I thought I would finish with a poem kind of in memoriam to people who love to read. Books die out of dark bedrooms, where the only road paved by yellow lamp led to their pages. They're stuffed in every corner of a house, thus turning it into a huge book cemetery. Those whose names do not ring any bell are taken to the attic, where they lay 20 books in one box, a mass grave. Books become widows. In empty apartments, nobody's heart beats above them. No one shares with them a dinner or drops them into a bathtub. Nobody watches them lose their pages like hair, like memory. Books age alone. And the most sensitive book stays forever in a cold bed, covering its head with a pillow, suppressing the scream of its black letters. Old books, neglected graves. Thank you.
Valjina Mort at Rockhurst University's Midwest Poet Series. In this half of our New Letters on the Air interview, the Belarus native talked about her 2011 book, Collected Body. The other half featured her earlier book, Factory of Tears, the first bilingual Belarusian English poetry collection ever published in the U.S. You can hear her read in both English and Belarusian as she talks about language, translation, and poetry. For links to that and to a preview recording by The New Yorker of a poem from her next book, Music for the Dead and Resurrected, due out in fall 2020, visit newletters.org. If you'd rather read my interview, it's in volume 79, number 2 of New Letters magazine, along with her poems, including Sylt 1, that was part of Best American Poetry 2014. Produced at UMKC's New Letters magazine since 1977, we're currently trying to keep the show sailing through the pandemic. If you'd like to find out how to keep us afloat, email radio@newletters.org or call 888-548-2477. That number again is 888-LIT-AIRS. You can also follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram. Today's show was originally produced with Stephanie Hughes, Ross Steinmetz, Jason Scheifler, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.